This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me in eastern Tennessee at Roan Mountain State Park in southern Appalachia. Tennessee State Park Ranger Philip Nyland and I are perched on a rock overlooking North Carolina and the Smoky Mountains.
Yeah, we're looking out across at Mount Mitchell, the highest range in the southern Appalachia.
State Park Ranger Robin Peeler at nearby Rocky Fork State Park shares her passion for the biodiversity of the region, and she talks about the unique local fireflies who have taught themselves to synchronize their flashing to increase their odds of attracting a mate. Surrounded on three sides by the Cherokee National Forest, Rocky Fork is one of the state's newest parks, located in the scenic wilderness of the southern Appalachian Mountains of eastern Tennessee. The park is less than 45 minutes from Johnson City, Tennessee, and Asheville, North Carolina. We'll also stop in for a visit with the innkeepers at Tennessee's oldest hotel, the historic Eureka Inn, that's located in the heart of Jonesboro, that's also the oldest town in the state.
Jonesboro has branded itself as the storytelling capital of the world. There's storytelling everywhere you go here.
And then we'll discover how community engagement drives business at Ziggy Ray's Pizza Parlor in the Appalachian village of Elizabethton.
You put your phone in a box on the table and don't touch it, you get 10% off your meal.
Park Ranger Philip Hyland. I work here for Roan Mountain State Park.
We were in Tennessee.
That's right, we were.
We're in North Carolina now?
That is technically right here in North Carolina. That sign behind us is in Tennessee, right on the line.
And we're on top of the world, right? We can see for miles and miles.
Yeah, we're looking out across at Mount Mitchell, the highest range in the southern Appalachia.
And how far away is that?
From us, it would be a good drive of about 45 minutes, but we're probably a good 25 miles before we get to the base of it.
Looks like an overnight walk to me.
Yeah, that's right. So we're here on Roan Mountain right now looking across. So we're on the second highest mountain in the southern Appalachia. Right now, we're not at the very top of Roan, but it's a very long stretching mountain range. There's balds, like one more atop now, going on for miles.
And bald as in being bald.
Just like when treeless. I lose my hair
yeah.
One day. That's right.
Yeah, so I feel comfortable here. So why are these bald spots on the mountains?
There's a lot of theories. The biological one that is most accepted today is because of the harsh winters that you'll have here. The elevation actually gives it the term Canada climate because the types of species that exist here from glacial till periods actually are those that you find only in Canada.
I saw a sign earlier. We were at 5,000 feet, and we've hiked up since there. What's our altitude right now?
We're at 5,512. We could actually keep on going up to 6,284.
And the valleys are what?
The valleys where we were at the park itself was actually about 3,000 above sea level.
So a 2,000 foot climb.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so my point where I'm going with that is the higher you get altitude, even in the southern regions, you replicate northern climate. So this would be much more of New England or even southern Canada, right?
Precisely. This is about similar elevation to Mount Washington, very similar climates.
And I hope not as windy.
Yeah, actually, you'd be surprised. This is pretty mild right now. The wind speeds can get up to about 50 miles an hour here. And in the winter, you can get with wind chill down to the negative 30s.
Wow. That being said, when's the ideal time to come here? Would it be fall and spring?
I guess, you know, it depends on what you're looking to do. The ideal time for the majority of people looking for something unique to Roan Mountain, of course, is going to be June. Because, one, the temperatures on a hot summer day up here are like spring again. The second thing is, only for a week, you will witness something incredible. You'll witness the largest naturally occurring garden of rhododendron on planet Earth bloom. We have up here a very unique rhododendron called Catawba rhododendron, and it blooms very much light reddish hue to pink. Sometimes people say a purplish hue.
These are acres and acres.
We're talking miles, yeah. And it's incredible. You'll be up here on this bald, looking around you, everything's just turned that purple, roanish haze, which is one reason this may have gotten the name Roan Mountain.
And there is a horse story about Roan Mountain, too.
That's right. Yeah, they say that Daniel Boone, one of the early settlers and explorers, long hunters of the area, had a horse that was roan-colored. And he brought it atop this mountain range to graze and to kind of be out on the hunt and also searching for new territories. Well, apparently he lost his horse, and the climate during the time of the year being late fall was not very good for staying overnight, so he had no choice but to leave his horse, who had taken off. After the winter had subsided and it was possible to climb up again, he returned. Thinking that his horse would be long gone, he was surprised to find it still up here grazing.
There's another nuance of that story that somebody told me, and that is all myth and legend and lore, but it was that his horse went lame. And so he just basically, well, rather than putting it down, he would just abandon it. And when he came back, it was all healthy.
Miraculous,
again.
Yeah. There are actually another group of legends based on this mountain. And actually some of the advertisements to the famous Cloudland Hotel that was on top of the mountain was the medicinal properties, the healing properties of the air here atop the mountain.
Big hotel.
It was several stories and kind of like a modern day hotel. It sat high atop the mountain and was built to rock in the breeze that happens here. By breeze, we obviously mean several 30 miles per hour. But you would be sitting in the clouds looking down across Appalachia.
And this was way over 100 years ago, right?
That's right. So this was at the turn of the century that you would have been able to come up here.
20th century.
That's right, 20th century. Late 1800s, early 1900s, you would have found General John T. Waters' mark on the land. And that was the famous Roan Mountain Inn down in the village. And then by horse and buggy, you would climb the Roan Mountain to the Cloudland Hotel.
And there was some really famous naturalists who came here.
Kind of even before any of the tourism that was famous, you had people from Europe come over to see the specimens of plants that were on this mountain range. And Roan quickly became famous for botanists. So you have a lot of endemic flowers that were named after these famous botanists. Some of those names that you might recognize, of course, John Muir actually stopped atop this mountain.
He spent some time here, right?
He did, yeah. He spent several several days here kind of just searching for things. And the views, he just would stop and write little columns about them, quotes that many people know originated from his views atop these Appalachian mountains.
And then it was Douglas, as in Douglas Fir, the Scot. He came here, right?
He did as well. And also John Fraser, that we know for the Fraser Fir, that he made his way here, actually within this mountain range, found and hence named after himself, the Fraser Fir. Today, those of us that keep the Fraser Fir for a Christmas tree, it was actually something native here to the Roan.
Interesting. So let's talk about the traveler coming here. Number one, what sort of infrastructure is here? Are there cabins and tent sites? And what is available in the infrastructure?
So I have to speak for my park first, of course. We're kind of famous for being known as a base camp for adventure, being right there at the foot of Roan Mountain. Roan Mountain State Park offers a great destination, just a good 10-minute drive from the top of the mountain. And that was a pretty exciting drive, isn't it?
Yeah. For,
if you've never climbed that high, it's kind of neat to be able to look over and all of a sudden you think you're out in Western United States again.
I think that's one of the disconnects is the drama and the vertical rise of geology here is so incredible.
Absolutely. Just to give an idea of what is in this area for people to do and stay, we have several cabins. We have 30 of them that are old-fashioned, kind of brings you back to that Appalachian era. With that, they don't have modern AC, no TV. It takes you to the day where you come up here and you enjoy those that you bring with you. And from there, you go outside and enjoy nature.
How much would it cost? What would be the least expensive cabin that you could rent here?
You can rent in the on-season here throughout the spring and the summer going into November, a cabin for $90 to $100 here with us.
And is there any place to eat?
Several places to eat. Right around Roan, you have some of the best barbecue. In fact, namely so, the Highlanders Barbecue just down at the base of Roan Mountain is really good eating. You also have the Smoky Mountain Bakery, which makes some of the best wood-fired pizza. So we know how to eat up here, too.
There you go. And for somebody traveling along the East Coast, maybe they're in Virginia or North Carolina, what would be the closest metropolitan hub town where they could come and maybe even do a day trip?
The best place to get to that would be a lot of hotels and amenities would be Johnson City, Tennessee. Johnson City is great, especially in fall, because, again, it's at the base of the Appalachian Mountains, so you get that fall color change that everybody loves. You're just a 45-minute drive from any one big mountain range away. So Asheville, North Carolina, Sugar Mountain, here at Rome Mountain, it's not too far.
Philip Nyland, ranger with Tennessee State Parks, thanks so much for sharing.
Absolutely, thank you.
My pleasure. Here we are in the middle of a forest. Whereabouts are we?
You're at Rocky Fork State Park in Unicoi County in Upper East Tennessee, almost in North Carolina.
I was going to say, we're so far deep into Appalachia and the mountains, Smoky Mountains, right?
You absolutely are, yeah.
You're Robin Peeler, and you are...
I'm the park area manager for this region of the state. Wow. So I'm Area 6. I oversee 9 state parks up in the Knoxville and Johnson City area of Tennessee.
So they let you out of the office today.
They did, and yeah. It's a great day to be outside, not stuck in a meeting or behind a computer for a change. Yeah.
So even though your career has evolved into administration, you started out as being a bug girl and liking nature.
Absolutely, yeah. Sure. Yeah, I started as a seasonal naturalist right out of college, just leading tours, describing the wildflowers and the plants and going out at night, listening for owls, that kind of thing. And after a couple of years, got on full time, became a ranger. Mm-hmm. And we all have to go to State Police Academy, so became commissioned. And commissioned ranger, I've been doing that for about 20 years. But about 10 years into that, I got into management, became a park manager.
So along the way, you were post-trained, right?
That's
you were So you were a certified police officer.
That's right.
So yes. I need to behave around here.
I would suggest that, yeah. Yes.
Since you do have a pistol
that's right.
Your side there.
Yes.
So interesting, though, that full gamut in your life. Talk about the bug part of your life, because I know you did not leave that behind.
Oh, no. I still, entomology and botany are my two favorite natural topics. So I would have to say botany rises to the top, so I'm still a wildflower person. And every little thing, I'm like, if I don't know what it is, I have to figure it out and learn a little bit about it. Why is it special? Where does it grow? And this park where we are today is just, there's so many wildflowers. It's such a diverse area, so.
Talking about diversity of species and plants, are there plants and bugs that are unique to Tennessee in this area, only found here?
I am not 100% sure about that. I know we have some salamander species that are really rare that are not even in the Smokies. We have some wildflower species that are rare, too. Further in Middle Tennessee, we have some coneflowers that are literally just only in that area of the state. But I just know that it's so diverse, though. There's so many. It's just so rich and pure up here, so you get a lot.
From a visual standpoint, from experiential, immersing yourself in the state parks, in the Smokies, what are you most enamored with when you look around and see with your eyes?
With the natural world?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just, gosh, how rich it is and how green. Of course, all the seasons are different, but just you fall in love with each season as it unfolds. It's this, and it's so different, and every year it's so different, and it's just like learning everything all over again. Just walking outside, seeing the diversity and how peaceful it is, and honestly running into our visitors. You know, we are with the Park Service, so we love our visitors, and just interacting with guests and helping them become excited about it too. It's a highlight of the job for us.
And we're in the middle of a rural backwaters of Tennessee. We're far from major metropolitan areas. And so who comes here to this park, for example? Tell us again the name of it, and is it mostly day use visitors?
It is at this time. So this is a fairly new park. We are near Johnson City, Tennessee. The closest town is Irwin, Tennessee. And again, we're at the North Carolina-Tennessee line. So Upper East Tennessee, almost in North Carolina. Your biggest hikers are coming from Johnson City, and that's a university town. East Tennessee State University is there. A lot of people come up for day hikes,
But even Knoxville, people like to explore. And as the park becomes more well-known, people from all over the state and across into North Carolina are coming to check it out.
So what you're saying is that this is a best-kept secret at this
point. It truly is. It's a new park, and it is day use. This fall, we're opening backcountry camping sites.
Oh, wow.
So people will be able to come in, get a permit, and spend the night. And people are so excited about that. So that'll change the dynamic of the park with overnight visitors. We are really close to the AT as well. So the AT is just a few miles away. The Appalachian Trail.
Oh, okay.
The Appalachian Trail. Yeah, we're very proud of that here in the East.
And that's legendary.
Yes, it is. And it's so close to here. So this is kind of a side trip for people on the AT.
Some of them divert off of
Absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, okay. And come over here. Now that we'll be having camping sites available for them, near water with pit toilets, the whole deal. It'll be a really nice break for them to get off of the trail.
Okay, so closer to home, your favorite state park.
You know I can't give a favorite. Let me think.
One of your recommended. It's like the what's your favorite child?
That's exactly right. I love them all. So up in this region, I really love Roan Mountain is really popular. It's up in the mountains again, almost in North Carolina, but it's
Well, we were up there, and I stepped across the border on that mountain.
Did you go there? Okay.
Yeah.
And just like you saw the rhododendron and the balds, it's just a very neat place. And we have lodging up there, so you can stay, have a total getaway. It's relaxing, beautiful. They get the first snow and the last snow of the season, so you can literally find snow in Tennessee about probably 7 months out of the year.
Yeah, I was with the ranger there this morning, and I was going, you know, it's kind of like going to Canada because you got the altitude.
Totally.
So you have a earlier fall. And
absolutely, yeah. And it's cooler up there, too. I was just up there last week myself, and it's just, you get out of your vehicle, and it's just a breath of fresh air. But as you head towards Nashville, one of my favorite parks is Pickett State Park, and that's a CCC park, Civilian Conservation Corps.
So you're talking about 1930s.
That's exactly right, and the CCC built that park. And it's another remote park and a wilderness area, and so well-kept and pristine and lots of hiking trails.
What city is that closest to?
Jamestown, Tennessee would be the closest town. And
in bigger city, how far, like Knoxville?
It's halfway between Knoxville and Nashville, really, but due north of Crossville, which is a medium-sized city. So if you get north of Crossville, just take I-40 right through Tennessee, and you'll see all of our signs for all of our Tennessee state parks. And it's
wow, that's easy.
I know. Just travel through the state. There you go. You'll pass them all.
The state park trail, Interstate 40.
Right. It's true. That's true. Yeah. If you head out of Knoxville and go south, you'll catch some on 24. There's some down near Chattanooga. South out of Nashville, you'll catch some on 24 down there.
Well, let's talk about bugs again for a moment, because they're kind of unsung little heroes of our forests, and they don't get the due focus they deserve.
That's absolutely true. So an interesting thing here at Rocky Fork is our fireflies. We're really proud of our fireflies.
Well, do you have the ones that synchronize?
We do.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the coolest.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
I think around Gatlinburg where they do that, right?
That's right. Yeah. So we have the same species here.
And talk about that for people that don't know.
Yeah, I'm not an expert, but I could tell you a little bit. So they kind of, they're pretty low to the ground, and they just start slowly synchronizing. They're blinking, and then there's these wide breaks, and then it's just kind of scattered, and then it starts again. It's just a dating game, right? That's right. And the different levels of the trees, they're mating or fighting for territory or wooing their mates. But there's a lot going on.
But they're all synchronized in their flash. It's the only place pretty much in the world, right? There's maybe like one other place.
There's a couple. Yeah, one or two. Yeah, the Smokies and us. And then I think further out somewhere. I'm not even sure. But we don't have them anywhere else in Tennessee for sure.
One more bug story.
Okay. Oh, so just, we're enjoying the monarchs coming through now, and I guess a lot of people are as they're traveling, you know, south for the winter, but all the parks I've been to in the last month, it's just been amazing. On the undisturbed areas where we've let grow up with the native wildflowers, just the monarchs are slowly just working their way through, and it's beautiful to see that happen. Amazing what they're going through.
Yeah. Is there milkweed for them?
We do. Mm-hmm. It's one of our natives. We have several species of milkweed, but
that's probably one of the draws for them. Then,
So we work really hard to keep wild areas. So we do a little mowing along, you know, the roadside and around our cabins and whatnot, but we try to keep these wild areas so it's protected, and we have a lot of habitat for all the critters, including, you know, the butterflies passing through. But it's a really special time of year.
Robin Peeler, Tennessee State Park Ranger and Administrator.
That's right.
What a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming and welcome to Tennessee.
No, you don't want to leave.
You can stay.
I think I might.
Okay, good.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Jonesboro, Tennessee. Right now we're with Blake and Caitlin.
Hi.
Last name?
Oh, Yarbrough.
Yarbrough. And we're at historic Eureka Inn in the heart of downtown, Tennessee's oldest downtown.
That's right. And the most beautiful.
And it's staying at the Tennessee's oldest hotel.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
The Eureka, actually the name started back around 1901 when the doors opened to the public for it to be a public house.
Now it was a private residence from 1797 until 1900, and that's when it was purchased by the Millers and they turned it into the Eureka Hotel.
So this building built 1797, wow, still a long time ago.
Yeah, super long time ago. Yeah.
1 year after Tennessee became a state.
So this was way out. This was a long horse ride to get here, get anywhere.
Yes, the old Stagecoach Road used to come through, or well, Main Street used to be the old Stagecoach Road. And what's funny is that it was never, I mean, it's beautiful now, but this is the best it's looked since it started.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tell us about the inn itself for a moment, and you have other inns and B&Bs in town, I presume.
Oh, yes. Jonesboro is a really big B&B kind of town. We consider ourselves the best of both worlds. Historically, the Eureka had 16 rooms. Over time, one became a kitchen. When we took over, we took two bedrooms and turned them into dining rooms. So now we have 9 rooms available. But the catch with us is that we're an inn, and every room has its own private bathroom, which is quite a commodity in the B&B realm.
And then the breakfast is pretty much a full breakfast. And you come and sit down when you want. You don't have one seating with everybody.
Correct. That's something that we did not appreciate as travelers going to B&Bs ourselves. When we did our research and everything, I mean, we stayed at several different B&Bs and, you know, having to be on time, the seating chart. Like, if I can't sit next to my husband while I have breakfast, what kind of place is this?
This is a romantic getaway, not.
Yeah, not. It's forced socialization.
Well, they used to not serve breakfast here. The dining room that we currently have actually used to be a bedroom. We figured, you know, well, if we were going to be a bed and breakfast, we had to serve some type of food. So we started off small and did buffets, and then over time started to get to explore different avenues for breakfast. And now, you know, what we do is pretty stellar. So
made to order.
Okay, so the big picture is you come to a place, not usually a destination, a town, not because of the hotel or the inn, but because of the attractions, and then you have to find a place to stay.
Correct.
So now I found my place to stay, the Eureka Inn. Yay. And so, yeah, so now what would you guys have me do? Where would you take me if we had time to explore?
So Jonesboro has branded itself as the storytelling capital of the world, so that's a must.
I'm at home.
Yeah. There's storytelling everywhere you go here. So definitely stop at the Storytelling Center. We're within so many different waterfalls, hiking trails, if you like the outdoors, I mean, fly fishing, you name it. We're a very good hub where you can go out on an adventure and feel like you're in another world and then come back to civilization.
If you like to be a little scared, Jonesboro is the perfect town for that.
You mean it's haunted?
Well, being the oldest town, this was kind of the last stop back in the day if you were going to head out to the frontier land. And so it enticed all kinds of people to live in Jonesboro. Those that were trying to escape the modern cities, this is the last stop, and so they would hang here. But if you're, you know, if you're here to listen to some ghost stories, it's a perfect place for that.
I heard from a woman upstairs that her room is haunted, literally.
Yes, she had some stories. Yeah, Laura's room. Laura's room gets a lot of activity, which is cool because it is part of the original structure. So it does have the original floors and ceilings and walls from the 1790s house. So.
And rumor has it that the ghost hunters came here with all their high-tech equipment to communicate with the ghost.
They did, and I actually participated in their ghost hunt, and we heard lots of voices and intelligent responses, I mean, names and things of past owners, and so it was just really neat, you know.
So you're a believer.
I am a believer. I'm a chicken, and I am a believer.
Well, we've lived in Jonesboro for almost 6 years, half of which has been running the hotel, and the other half was just living here while we had jobs elsewhere. And we have constantly been in contact with ghosts, which is pretty impressive.
So that's a destination reason in itself.
Yeah, and nothing to be extremely scared of, nothing that's going to, you know, drag you out of bed or something of that nature. But if you want to, you know, live a little and let the hairs on your skin kind of stand up, this is the perfect place for that.
Between you and me, I'm glad my room is ghost-free.
No worries, yeah. They're okay. Friendly. Yeah.
On to another subject, which is my own personal favorite and why I love Jonesboro. Been here before. Is the architecture and the living, palpable history. Mm-hmm. It's one of those, kind of like Williamsburg, as you walk down the street, you feel and you can see that sense of what it was like 150 or more years ago.
Absolutely. One of our past owners of the inn, Dr. William Kennedy, he is one of the main people that spearheaded the restoration, the historic restoration of Jonesboro. The reason that it looks the way that it does today, the Eureka was a labor of love for the town. It's just amazing how much research went into scraping off the paint, sending it off for test samples, trying to recreate exactly what it was back in the Victorian
days. Yeah, you Victorian. Know, that was the highlight of when Jonesboro was...
It was its heyday.
Yeah, it'd be its heyday when people were able to purchase the houses, be able to put more luxurious things on them, you know, all the tin roofing to the copper guttering, all of that, and so...
Was it always or for a long time in history a vacation destination, a place where people came to stay and then explore or get away from the big city or no?
I have heard, because we weren't around, but that like the late 90s, the 90s era, it was really popping as far as a destination. And then tourism kind of took a little bit of a dive, I guess. But people are obsessed with vintage things. It's very trendy, and Jonesboro is the epitome of a vintage town. I mean, but all the way vintage, you know?
Well, let's dovetail back to something you mentioned earlier, and that's the Storytelling Center. This is big time. This is National Storytelling Center, where there are huge events that take place here throughout the year.
Oh, yeah. We get all of the heavy-hitting storytellers. We've actually had several stay with us, and they're just the most down-to-earth people, but they can capture hundreds and hundreds of people with just, you know, 30 minutes of just a story, and it's just super neat. Donald Davis, Kim Whitecamp, Bill Lepp, there's so many. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and we get some interesting people that come just for storytelling. The festival itself is one thing, but the year-round art of storytelling. What, Tennessee's oldest guild is the Storytelling Guild that happens every Tuesday here in the city.
Local storytelling, and then they highlight whoever the teller
is. The festival is, what, 40 years old, but the art of storytelling in Jonesboro has happened for forever. I mean, whether it be people that would pick up, you know, would stop near the courthouse on the back of their trucks and just engage people that would be passing through town. And then also, with this being one of the last stops into the frontier, those that went into the frontier would make their way back into Jonesboro and then tell their tales of it. I mean, we're an area that's built out of legends of Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone, and, you know, those were the tall tale tellers way back in the day.
One of my pleasant discoveries is that you can get a master's degree at Eastern Tennessee State University. I'm thinking, I want to come back, and I want to get a master's, because I would love to be a master at storytelling.
Oh, yeah, and what's cool about the storytelling program at ETSU, I can't recall, like, the main professor's name, but it's not just, you know, the teller-in-residence program here in Jonesboro. We just are the hosts, we don't organize it or anything, but a spoken word night once a month, and the turnout is amazing, and it's all ages, and we're seeing more youth come out, which is great, so it's carrying on a tradition which has gone on for lifetimes, but it's just nice that it's not being it's not falling to the wayside with the age of technology where no one really writes anything down anymore. You know, it's all speaking to my phone. And
and we're in the Appalachia area, and Appalachian folklore is huge. And, you know, I'd say that they've been telling these stories all the way from, you know, our ancestors that came from Ireland and Scotland and the UK, and they've been telling those stories and have passed them on to this generation in this area. So, neat thing.
Yeah. Well, and it's making a new way, just like a river will carve through a canyon. You know, there's the musical side of storytelling. There's the visual art side of storytelling. You can tell a picture, tell a story with just anything, or people combining all of those things, like painting a picture while telling a story. It's just...
And even the ghost stories.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the highlights is the ghost stories that they tell from this city as well as from the other areas, which makes it really interesting.
And Bell Witch is supposed to be floating around somewhere in this area.
What's the name of the witch?
The Bell Witch.
The Bell Witch.
Yeah.
Because...
Something about a cave. I know the story deep down in my brain somewhere, but I know that she is not to be messed with. But it's somewhere in the, what, like a 20, 30-mile radius?
Yep.
I don't know much of the story. I just know that she haunts the area.
Yeah.
She'll
mess you up. That's what I've heard.
Don't mess with the Bell Witch.
That's right. Yeah. That's the moral to the story.
All right. Well, Blake and Caitlin, thank you so much for sharing. This has been wonderful.
You're welcome. Glad to have.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome. And if somebody wanted to learn more about the historic Eureka Inn,
they would give us a call, which you can always do, 423-913-6100, or check out our website, which is eurekajonesboro.com. And then there's always the social media aspect. We're on Facebook and Instagram. You can just search for us and follow us or like our page. And, I mean, we post our specials of the week for breakfast and pictures of the room and just fun things that go on throughout the course of our days here at the Inn.
Blake and Caitlin, again, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from historic Jonesboro, the oldest town in Tennessee.
We're in downtown Elizabethan, in the heart of Appalachia.
On the Tennessee side.
Yes, sir.
And the name of your restaurant?
Jiggy Ray's Downtown Pizzeria.
And I heard a rumor, somebody told me you're like a great-great-great-grandfather was Biggie Ray.
Biggie Ray.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And then descendant, you had Miggy Ray.
Yeah. Jiggy Ray, Ziggy Ray. It's the whole family, you know.
Well, that's been going on for a long, long time, right?
Yes, sir. Like, as far as anybody knows, yes, sir.
Yeah. Your full name is?
I'm John Malone, and I'm co-owner with John Seahorn. Yeah, two John's owners. They've been calling me Bull for about 30 years, so everybody knows me as Bull, and him as Johnny. But, you know, we opened this place maybe 5 years ago on Black Friday. You want to talk about a dumb idea? Open up a new restaurant on Black Friday. Absolutely insane. We sold out of food that night, sold out of everything.
Wow.
The next day, had to go to Reinhardt and buy some more food and stuff to make. Sold out again on Saturday. And from that point on, we have been...
This was right out of the chute.
Oh, man, we've been so blessed. Absolutely. It's been amazing.
So obviously, the locals were waiting for this to happen, though.
You know, it was something different, something new, not a chain. You know, just kind of some good old boys making some good quality pizza. And that's the thing, is we, from the get-go, we wanted to do it right. Like, we use Anthemo Caputo flour. Everything down to our flour, is the best you can get.
So there was really no compromise in sourcing?
Absolutely zero compromise. I mean, our flour is literally twice as expensive as an All Trump's or a Pillsbury brand. But when you taste the crust, you're like, I get it. Makes sense. Little things like that, like our salad bar, we shop for produce 6 days a week. Nothing's in this restaurant more than 24 hours.
That's it.
That salad bar is as fresh as it's like being in somebody's garden. We love it.
So what are you most known for when people think of this restaurant? Is it pizza?
You know, what we say is we are a pizza place first that offers live music, offers karaoke. You know, we do some open mics. But, you know, our main thing is the food. We want the restaurant to be the selling point. However, we have been so fortunate to have some incredible bands come through here. we had a small stage. We don't pay these musicians what they're worth. But we give an opportunity, you know, to come to a lively crowd and have some fun in downtown Elizabethton. And it was something new for the community. And the community has embraced it. So
that's a regular, every week you have some live music.
Tuesday nights we have Downtown Country, this group of guys that's been playing here for 3 years, every Tuesday night. They are insane. The quality of country music is just old school. Thursday night's karaoke. This place is crazy, karaoke.
And when you say country music, would that be more the Appalachian sound?
Some, the Tuesday night guys, they do a lot of old school classic country, Conway Twitty. And, you know, they throw in some newer stuff, but it's
more the Nashville sound.
Or, right, you know. Yeah, exactly like the old Nashville sound. Friday and Saturday we have bands, and I've had people, you know, like Brittany Bexon, who has toured Europe. She comes here and plays once a year, sometimes twice a year. We've had some great people that travel in to play, but there's so much talent here in our area with musicians that never have to worry about, can I find an artist?
And there's no cover to get in?
Never charge a cover. We do a few outdoor festivals here in the alley beside us. We charge a $5 donation to that to get in out there, and that money goes to our, what we call Raising the Dough for Education. We do a scholarship program. There's 5 county high schools in our county. And we give a $500 scholarship to each school every year. So that money goes to that program.
In your community give back, the things that you do, is that typical of what the businesses up and down the street also do? So it's really, the community is really invested in the community.
Absolutely it is. And, you know, it's just such a great place to be, from the people to the environment. Like I said, just laid-back attitude of, you know, we're not a big city. We're not in a rush. We're not in a hurry. We want to do things right. We want to enjoy our time. You know, like we offer a thing on Wednesday nights, family game night. And if you put your phone in a box on the table and don't touch it, you get 10% off your meal. And people are like, why would you do that? I was like, you know, we just want people to get back to communicating. You know, talk.
Get off your phone.
And so sometimes the kids on Wednesday night, they're like, I don't want to give my phone up. But when they do it, they realize, you know, I just spent an hour and a half talking to my best friend. I didn't even know anything about him. You know, and it's a great thing to see him laughing and not doing this. You know,
was that your idea?
Yeah. Me and John were talking about it. I was like, you know, because I have a 12-year-old daughter. She's always wanted to be on her phone. And we do that at home. I was like, it's a no-phone zone right now. Put your phone away. It's family time. And that's helped us. You know, it helps us to, on a daily basis. Figure, let's try it here, and it's been a lot of fun. But, you know, like I said, we've been very blessed from the get-go to be able to, you know, not only just have a restaurant. We always dream of having a little restaurant in my hometown. You know, that's where I grew up. But the music side of it has been an addition. And we wanted to have live music, but didn't know it was going to take off like it did. Like, I'm booked solid right now through December. And again, we pay pennies and pizza, basically, and but yet musicians they just want a place to come play.
But they're probably doing pretty good on tips too, right?
They are. Certainly they are.
So it's totally worth their while anyway, and they'd probably play totally for free, even without a pizza.
They would, and because most people that have that kind of talent, you know, I tell them, I say, I can't pay you what you're worth. There's no way.
Right.
I know how many hours you put in to learn how to play the guitar like that, or learn how to play your instrument. I can't pay you what you're worth, but I can promise you we'll take good care of you, we'll appreciate you, and the customers will appreciate it. The music community is a wonderful bunch of people, so again, just another blessed avenue.
And how far from North Carolina are you?
Well, see, if you go up through Rome Mountain, you can be in North Carolina in 45 minutes. We're right across the mountain from Boone, going one direction, right across the other mountain from Asheville. So we're right in the center.
You really are in the heart of Appalachia,
absolutely,
huh?
Absolutely we are. The Appalachian Trail passes right through our county. So, you know, and we get a lot of hikers, we get a lot of, you know, Elizabethton is such a unique little town. You know, we have like the Elizabethan Twins, you know, a minor league baseball team in a small little town. It's a great thing for us.
Really? And, is it double A or what?
Hey, Dave, what are the Twins? Triple A. Double A, rookie.
Okay.
So yes, I mean, you got that. You know.
Wait, what's the turnout like for your team?
Man, there's a lot of support in the community. It's just been one of those things that, again, to have a small town, have something that great, it's the best place in the world to be.
So tons of community pride for the team then.
Certainly. And you know, in our community, where we have the Watauga River passes right by downtown. The Doe River runs through downtown. These are some beautiful trout fishing rivers, and now we're looking at doing a whitewater project to bring in, you know, more people that can appreciate the beauty that we have here. Not just, you know, not an amusement park type deal, but a place where they can just come enjoy the river, go rafting, go tubing, you know, rent a cabin on the river and fish for the weekend. Far better than going to Disney World.
What's really interesting is you're talking, it makes you realize and feel and understand how this town and this county and community is a bazillion miles from Washington, D.C. and that whole world, right? It's like an alien planet.
It is. Yeah. See, the mentality of, you know, to be political and you have to agree with this, and or if you don't agree with this, then we're not going to be friends with you. You don't see that in a town like this. You know, you have people that support one candidate or support one party, but it's not a vicious place. You know, there's nobody out to stab you in the back. It feels like the whole county is home. You don't get that a lot of places.
And it goes without saying that church and religion is very strong and very much a part of the town. It's fabric.
It is, you know, we are in the middle of the Bible Belt. Yep. But again, I don't see this town as a religious town. It's certainly
just a part of the fabric of life here.
Yeah, it is. You know, the moral side of it, people have that to where, you know, they just old school, love your neighbor as yourself, you know, that kind of deal.
So just live it, don't talk it.
Exactly.
Because that's what I sense here and throughout my time in Tennessee, Eastern Tennessee. It's
because there's a big difference in East Tennessee, Middle Tennessee.
Oh, I know, believe me, I know.
I mean, a huge difference.
Yeah, different world.
I think the mountains do it. I think it's the mountain air that
clears the head.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, well, anyway, I should let you go, but thanks for sharing, man.
I appreciate you guys very much. And
my pleasure. And once again, your name and where we are and if you have a website or something.
Okay. My name is John Malone. Our website is JiggyRays.com. We are at Jiggy Rays Pizzeria in downtown Elizabethan.
I love it. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Appalachian Trail region of Eastern Tennessee. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.
The underbed music, Whistling Asheville Blues, was performed by five-time Grammy Award-winning musician David Holt.